The specialists are back, and today we are starting our rewatch club. This is the first podcast of the Survivor China rewatch, and I'm so excited to have a wonderful guest, my friend, comedian, Survivor superfan, TikToker, Big Brother superfan, Ryan Erwin is here. Ryan, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm doing great. Very excited. This is one of my favorite seasons, so I can't wait to jump in. And the premiere episode is so good. So happy to be here.
It's so good. Now, one thing I'm going to do, I'm going to start off every single one of these kind of rewatch podcasts. I want to know, did you watch, like, when is the first time you watched Survivor China? How old were you? What did you like, what is your history with this season specifically?
Okay, so I've been a day one watcher of Survivor, but during high school, I got a little busy and this aired while I was in high school. So I remember watching it, but I wasn't like every week. Mm-hmm. I was very intrigued because I am from Utah and Todd is from Utah. So like I do remember like watching that up to date. And then during the pandemic, I did my rewatch of every Survivor season and I was like, I forgot how much fun this was. Yeah. And so it's so fun to come back and revisit it.
Yeah, it's a really, really fun season. I was so excited that for those of you who don't know, this season was established by a vote by you guys. We had over 400 people vote on what season to watch. And this one won by a good margin, which I was really, really excited about because this actually was the first season that I ever watched ever. The first episode of Survivor that I ever watched was the premiere episode of Survivor China. So it's really, really fun. Ryan, actually, when we were watching this, Ryan actually reminded me of that. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. This is really the first episode I ever watched. So, you know, it's really fun to go and rewatch. Because this is the premiere episode, and for those of you listening, I want to establish a couple of things. We are going to be keeping the podcast spoiler-free. As spoiler-free as we possibly can, as we both have seen this before, obviously there will be some, you know, probably biases coming out about, you know, we know what happens and it's kind of impossible to forget that, but we're going to keep this as spoiler-free as possible. What we will be doing is in the last like 10 to 15 minutes of the podcast, I will be announcing spoiler time. And if you've never seen this and this is your first time watching the season, you can turn off the podcast. And then we will be talking about spoilers there at the end. But Ryan, starting off, premiere episode, what was your initial thought in the first couple of minutes in this episode?
Here's one of my hot takes. I think this might be the best premiere episode of a season of Survivor.
Wow.
Borneo, Pearl Islands, Heroes versus Villains all had really good premiere episodes. But there was, like, this is definitely up there. Maybe it's not number one, but it's definitely in the top five. But just, like, it starts with, like, when Jeff is like, here they are in like modern day Shanghai. And then they're going to board a bus, a train and go out to like the middle of nowhere where a lot of them, they start on like a barge or a boat. This one, like, I think it's like the only Survivor season they started like in a city, which was like just kind of like fun. And then you see them like on a train and you know that train ride was definitely like 2 days. It wasn't like a 30-minute train ride.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Sleeper cars, like, and then like they have this giant hike up to the temple that I was like, just the starting of it, I was like, oh, I'm hyped. Because Jeff went through like every person's like occupation, like Todd, a gay Mormon, Leslie, a Christian radio host. And he went through like every single professional poker player, just like going through all of like their intros and bios. I was like, okay, I'm for this. It's so great. And then the opening montage, like the, what is it called?
Ancient Voices? What are you talking about?
Yeah, where it has like their names and like their their cut solo. It goes so hard. That warrior running out of the bamboo. I was like, ah, it's so good.
It's really, really good. I really loved the train. The train is something that you don't get a lot of in, like, you never. Like, that's not a thing. And it felt, yeah, it's felt so interesting. And I mean, China was a very interesting backdrop to begin with. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure this was the first non-scripted thing that could film in China ever.
I think American television show to film in China. I think just like
across the board.
Yeah.
So that was like a very, very big deal. And so I think that it's really cool to see the different, like, not only are we seeing, you know, the game of Survivor, but we're also seeing all of these different aspects of this place. And I find that really, really fascinating. It is such a beautiful way to kind of open it up. And then we get to the temple and we go through this, you know, the ceremony. And what a great way to introduce characters. I mean, Jeff says it's not religious, like this is not a religious ceremony, but we see that there's already people who are going to be like staunchly in their beliefs or like just hard-headed. Courtney is one of the most interesting, introductions to a person in Survivor maybe ever, because not many people that I know would be annoyed by going through like a traditional Buddhist ceremony in China. And she's like, he like fixes her hands and she like rolls her eyes, just like setting us up for, she's going to be a lot. And it's a kind of a great way to set up a character.
And then juxtaposing that with Leslie being like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then like, it's just like the extreme polarity, both of them hated it, but for like two different reasons, which I thought was so fun. Cause like, that's the thing I sort of love about lots of conflicts on Survivor and Big Brother. It's like, I like it when it reveals, like you said, character, when it reveals like immutable truths or whatever about these people, that is what is interesting to me. Not like, oh, I lost my vote. It's like, oh no, I lost respect. Or I lost like admiration for something. Like, I think that's so fun. And like the first 10 minutes of this premiere, just that whole cycle, it's so unique. It's so distinct. And this is what so many people love about old school Survivor, is when like, cause it's unique to the place that it's happening. And there's like cultural like touchstones around it, that this was just so good.
Very, very good. Now, after the Buddhist ceremony, the thing that I find hysterical is this, like, I don't know, I think what Survivor New Era and just like even not even New Era, just new Survivor does, is it doesn't, like, everyone knows what they're doing and nobody pretends that it's not what they're doing, right? Nobody pretends that they're not going to be on a show about survival in your underwear in whatever, like in the middle, like to vote people off. Like, nobody pretends about any of that. There's so much kind of pretending that goes, like, granted, I don't know, they don't know how it actually is going to go, but the fact that, like, Jeff says, like, you know, just like in the Buddhist tradition, you know, it's you're getting rid of your worldly possessions and you're going to be getting rid of your suitcases. Who thought that they were actually going to get their suitcases? Like, do you think they actually thought that they were going to take that with them?
Well, I think this is one of the thoughts I had, is because, you know, from Pearl Islands, spoiler alert, in the first 5 minutes of the season, the cast is told we're doing a photo shoot, we're playing tomorrow, but then they tell them, actually, we're playing today and what you're wearing is what you're wearing into the game. I think maybe at that point in time, the people playing thought, oh, we're doing this because China's special and it's distinct, but then like we'll get to change into our outfits, because like Sharia's like, I'm in heels, one woman's like, I don't have a bra on. I think that a lot of them maybe thought that this was just sort of like a day zero, like a special intro, because like that train ride, you see them talking to each other.
That's true. Yeah.
They're talking to each other before the game starts. So I think they thought that they would like get to like change outfits or something. That's where I think their brain went. And then it's like, no, what you're wearing is what you're wearing. And they're like, ugh.
I think you're probably so right, but just me sitting on my couch, like being a crazy Survivor super fan that I am, I think to myself, if I ever get on Survivor and they ever say, okay, it's time for a photo shoot, your girl's wearing, 19 layers of things. Like, I'm not going to believe a word that comes out of their mouths, especially in early Survivor. Yeah, sure, a photo shoot.
Yeah, my favorite thing is like, people were helping other people with their luggage. I'm like, you're wasting energy on stuff that is not yours. I would have been like, you can't carry your luggage. You should have packed lighter.
Literally.
And that also like could have had conflict around it, which is what
exactly.
I
like. Which is why you'd be a great cast casting. one thing I also, Ashley, like in her big, those big shoes that she's wearing, I'm like, that is a nightmare. That's a nightmare. I love this kind of start where, again, it's like subverting the cast expectations. And we're starting. We have we separate into tribes. Can I just say, two of my favorite buffs that have ever been made?
The China Fei local Long, itself is it's great.
So good. I lost my keys. I didn't lose my keys. I know exactly where my keys are in Los Angeles after the Survivor finale. it was in an Uber. Somebody in LA has them, but the reason why I want to get them back isn't because of the keys, because it's just a key to my house. I can get that remade. It's because I have a Survivor China keychain on it that Ryan got for me on eBay. That's like a vintage, like classic Survivor China keychain that I need back because it's very, very cool. Yeah. Because it's a great logo, and these buffs are great. And I just like, I don't know. They're so, the colors are just so striking. The red and the yellow next to each other is just so, I don't know. It's very striking. I know it's not that important, but it's something that I've noticed. No,
I also love that their tribe names were Flying Dragon and is it Crouching Tiger?
It's Fighting Tiger, I think.
Fighting Tiger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that they like took like the tiger and the dragon, like two very like, and like, yeah, we're going to do that instead of just being like, you know, a lot of like Fiji New Era stuff. It's like our tribe are named after like birds or like water. It's like, yeah. Oh, like theirs is like not just dragon, it's Flying Dragon. I just thought that was so fun.
I agree. Now for just like these tribes in particular, was there like when you saw these tribes separate, obviously, you know, you knew what was going to happen, but did you feel like one tribe was stronger than the other, or did you feel like they were evenly separated?
No, I do feel like one tribe is definitively stronger, but what it's something that happens on Survivor is sometimes I feel like they put too much male strength on one tribe because they're like, oh, we're going to put the weakest women on here. But then over here, we're like, we got some decently strong guys, but we'll put the strongest women here. But like a lot of these challenges where you're like throwing people over a wall, it's like, we kind of need a 6'2" man to throw us over. Like, so that's where I'm like, oh, nope, there's one tribe that I'm like, I think you're clearly stronger than the other. But I also don't care because, I mean, just from this first challenge alone, I don't think a lot of these challenges this season are the typical that require brute strength. I think, like, this one, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but, like, the challenge that we saw, I don't feel like being bigger and stronger was necessarily an advantage in any way, shape, or form. So, like, I'm actually kind of okay with it.
Same. And I mean, we can talk about the challenge. I know we're skipping a bit, but, you know, I'm not somebody who goes linearly.
Let's just keep going in order.
Okay. So when we get to the different tribe camps, one thing that I feel like I've been hearing a lot, like somebody commented on my video, they love how, you know, you kind of have to establish your camp a little bit more. Obviously, it's a new place. These players need to not only build a shelter, which they have to in modern day Survivor, but they also have to find out where things are. Like, there's a map. You have to really establish. How was that like for you watching like this old school version of Survivor? And they really, really established camp. And then we see somebody, one tribe work kind of okay together, and then one tribe work terribly together. Yeah. What was that like, that dichotomy?
It's fun because I'm like, when was the last time we had an argument on screen about where to set up shelter?
Yeah.
I was like trying to think back. I'm like, maybe like David versus Goliath, but I don't even think that was the where shelter should be, but I just think people thought Pat was being too much. And then Natalie, one of my favorite players of all time, was just not doing anything. But as far as like the argument about like, should it be up there or should it be over here? I'm like, I don't remember the last time we saw an argument like that, which is fun because it like definitely establishes tribe dynamics. Yeah. About like, you know, seeing Chicken be like, okay, you guys don't like my opinion, whatever. And
Chicken really said, if you're not gonna listen to me, I'm not gonna do anything. Good luck. Yeah, like, good luck. Good luck. Good luck.
He has a one strike policy. You reject me once, I'm done forever. Which honestly, respect.
I love Chicken is such a fun character. Chicken is very, this is very obvious what I'm about to say, is very big Tom coded in the sense that I need subtitles for what he's saying. His accent is so thick. Again, we're comparing this to New Era, but when is the last time we've had somebody where we just genuinely cannot understand a word they're saying?
Okay, so this is something that I thought about while I was watching, is these, you know, we've been clamoring for older players, blue collar players, different sort of things. And obviously the New Era meta is super fans who like study and analyze the game, prepare for the game. Most of the New Era is pretty like white collar or like middle to upper class. Like we don't get this sort of like real America thing. The sort of that we chicken farmer, a WWE wrestler and like all these different dynamic jobs and like backgrounds and personalities clashing is like what is like quintessential Survivor, where, you know, I do feel like while I do like so many players from the new era, like you kind of like end up on a tribe and it's like, oh, you know, I'm a marketing expert for YouTube. It's like, oh, cool. I work at Discord. Oh, I work. And it's just like, oh, you all have sort of like email jobs and, you know, you're here chasing the dream. Or there, it's just like so different personalities just coming together and clashing. Love it.
Yeah, I agree. One thing I really noticed about Camp Life, and I made a video about this, but it's something that really kind of is a shock to the system, is at camp, we hear so much discussion about leaders. And Todd does this thing where, like, in a big group of people at Fei Long, he says, you know, I think that we should establish a leader, and I think that Aaron, you should be the leader. Obviously, he does it better than that. But it used to be a thing in Survivor where leaders were something that needed to be established, which I find fascinating. And part of the problem with Sean Hu is they didn't have an established leader. No one was making the decisions. It was like, do you think, number one, do you think that leaders actively helped back in the day, like a tribe dynamic? And number two, why do you think that Survivor has moved away from the like needing a leader? Like the last time I remember it is probably Samoa or Cagayan for a little bit. Like why do you think that has happened?
One, I think they needed leaders because Jeff is like the beginning of Survivor. This was a social experiment that they were like, we were establishing a society. And in almost every society through like ancient civilization, there has been some sort of hierarchy of power. There's never just been like a collective mass that just operated in unison. Like even like back to like Mesopotamia and like ancient Egypt, there were leaders. There was a hierarchical structure that I think it's just kind of like instinctual human nature to be like, well, let's just have like one person like funnel everything to. So I do think that's sort of just been like the like almost a necessity in Survivor, because it's all like even in society, like it's impossible to just like exist as a cooperative. Like even in a friend group, there's always that one friend that's like, I send the emails, I make the reservations. Like there's just always that person that I just think that happens naturally and almost out of necessity. And the reason why I think it's gone away is because it doesn't actually like help your game long term. It helps the tribe short term, like get the shelter built, get like jobs rolled out, like maybe even get a majority alliance. But at a certain point, people are like, I don't want to be dictated to. I don't want that. Like, I don't know if there's ever been someone who stepped into the leadership role that went on to win.
The closest person I can think of is probably Russell. Who? Oh,
I was thinking Tom from.
Tom. That's I feel like the big one. I feel like Russell Swan, had his tribe not been decimated. I'm thinking of the Philippines. Russell Swan, had he not been medevaced, I don't think that was he in that bad of a position. I don't think he was. No,
but given how Galoo absolutely imploded on themselves. Yeah. So I think at some point they would have turned on him, but I don't know if he would have made it very close to
the end. That's true. I think you're right. Tom.
Yeah.
I think Tom is probably the one that makes the most sense. And I feel like there is something, I mean, the point that I said in my video was, I really think that the reason why it's not done anymore is because no one cares necessarily about tribe strength anymore. You know, we heard in the season 50 finale. Yeah. The meta has completely shifted. We heard in the season 50 finale, you know, when Jeff screwed up, but he also said, you know, fire is really important to Camp Life and you don't really care about Camp Life, Rizzo. So maybe think about that. But like, there are things that don't really matter in new era. And that's the Camp Life, number one. And number two, it's keeping your tribe strong, keeping your strength up. Because if you have a good alliance, you're going to make it to the merge in theory. And so I think the focus now is, instead of establishing a leader and establishing a hierarchy, it's finding 2 to 3 people that you can trust in an alliance. That's the priority. It's not, you know, who is going to be able to be the leader here, who's going to be dictating what's going on.
I will say, I think in the open era, I think leaders might find a way back in some way, shape or form. Because in a tribe of 6, I don't really know if you need a leader. Because like, if you get like a trio, you're like, well, we're half the tribe.
Right.
Whatever. We'll just kind of all like say we need to do this in unison. But with 10 people on a tribe, I do think there's a world where it's like, Okay, we need someone to just kind of like funnel thing. I wonder if, even if it's not in an official capacity, I think you'll start to see leaders sort of emerge in a tribe of 10. Because in the new era, we didn't get a lot of like complaints about camp life too much. Like in 41, people were upset with like Abraham. And then in, I'm trying to think like through 42, 43, Gabler was kind of like annoying with the palm fronds, but like he wasn't like the leader. That I'm wondering if in the open era, because we'll have bigger tribes back, this sort of concept of we need a leader or a leader will just naturally arise will come back.
I like that. I think that's a very, very, a very good observation and a very good thought. And I could totally see that happening. Now, I do want to talk about the discussion between, you know, Todd and Aaron about deciding a leader, because it's funny, this time, the leaders, it wasn't something that just came to fruition, right? It was a conversation that was had. How did you feel about that conversation? Because there was a couple people else around them. So it wasn't just them. It was like, here's my thought. Todd said, here's my thought. This is what I think it is. And what can Aaron say? If not, you know, I guess. How did you feel about that conversation?
From Todd's perspective, brilliant. Loved it. So great. Passing the buck, but not in a way that feels like whatever, like he was reading the scroll and Todd's like, well, I think we need a leader. And everyone's like, yeah. And it's like, well, Aaron, you volunteered and suggested we read The Art of War. You were the one that pushed the canoe. You were the one that like, kind of like pointing out, you've already kind of taken the leadership role. Let's just give you the formal title. That I think from Todd's point of view, I think it was justified. I think it was smart. If you're Aaron, it's kind of like, I shouldn't have stepped up too much. Like, to bring it back to me, when I played on my Survivor org, because I'm a very outspoken, strong personality, I'm like, don't be the leader. That was my head. 5 minutes into the call, like we, like our tribe gets on like our Zoom call, and like I was put on a tribe basically of introverts. So I was like, okay, so who's going to go around the circle and introduce themselves? And like teacher Ryan came out and was like, let's all share one thing about ourselves. How many seasons of Survivor we've seen? Da, da, da. And then I just became like the de facto leader. And then, you know, spoiler alert, if you ever watch Sub Rosa season 4, I am mayor of Ponderosa. I'm the merge boot because they're like, well, Ryan's the leader of Jiwa. And so I do, if I'm Aaron, it's just like, duh. But like, he also like couldn't help it because he goes,
right,
I know how to do this. I know how to do these things. Like, I feel bad for him, but like it also was kind of like his fault for leading prior to getting the title.
Yeah. I think Aaron is somebody that I kind of forgot about in terms of his character. And I'm really excited to see his trajectory through the season, because I think that there's something about him. I think maybe it's because he was kind of frustrated that he was put in this leadership position that makes me excited to see like where he continues on and how he, you know, and how he goes through the season. There's something about him that excites me. Same thing with Frosty, man. I forgot how much I really liked Frosty. I think he's such a fun character. I forgot parkour was a thing in 2008. I'm not going to lie. Even though I think that's the height of parkour. I think that's parkour.
I would say even until like 2013, like I was in college and we were jumping on things, be like parkour, we'd like jump off a bed, parkour.
Yeah, what a very specific point in time to have that be your bottom, you know, your job, parkour expert or whatever it was.
I also thought he was the youngest player at the time. He was 20.
Oh, you're right.
Because they said, Jeff even said, he's like the youngest player we've ever had Frosty at 20 years old. I was like, oh, that's right, because the first teenager, I think there's a 19 or 20 year old on Token Chains, but then it isn't until I think Redemption Island that Natalie Terralini, she's 19.
Yep.
So it's like, oh, like it just like, it didn't click that I'm like, oh, they had never gone below like 21 before.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that he's probably the strength on Jeonhu, even though he is a little bit shorter, but you can see, and we'll talk about it later, but in the challenge it does help him. Let's talk about, you know, Fei Long in a greater sense. Who on Fei Long do you think are like the standouts? Like, I loved that conversation between James and Leslie. Like the Iberi people is a crazy way to say that you're a grave digger. That's actually crazy.
Like iconic, but what do you do?
Yeah. What is Love I it. Barry? I, you know what? Off-putting, off-settling, but that's James. While we're talking about James, James is so, we also get a very interesting character with James because, yes. You know, you see him, he is this very tall, muscular guy, very good looking guy. If you see him on the street, you probably would think like, oh, he's probably the life of the party. Like, oh, he probably loves like, you know, all the attention just because he's just so attractive and he's, you know, so muscular and whatever else. And
then smile.
Huge smile. And then he says, the reason why I like my job is I can be by myself. And the thing that I'm nervous about here is being with other people. It's the people that I'm nervous about in the game. And I feel like this is a really interesting way to introduce James because Survivor's a people game. And yeah. That's the thing that he's nervous about. And so that was a really interesting, you know, kind of thing. And then it kind of puts into context like, oh yeah, he said, I bury people. Maybe he is not great with people. You know what I mean? Like maybe we're seeing that. But it was a really interesting way to introduce James. How did you feel about this interaction, but just like this, how the introduction to James?
First of all, James is so great. I love him. He's great. Like, I guess I just have to do good at the challenges to like prove my worth. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that's kind of like why you were cast, but like, yeah. Love that. Also, I love that Leslie is like, playing hard, being like, no, let me give you some advice. Let me coach you on how to play Survivor. We've been playing the same number of days, but I have some skills to help you out. But it's true. Like, she has probably better people skills than he does, but he has physical strengths that she doesn't have. And so I do love that Leslie was like, I'm going to take this opportunity to try and, like, build a bridge and build a bond with someone. And maybe if he fully trusts me, this could be something that could blossom going forward.
Yeah, it's really interesting rewatching this season because full disclosure, the first time I watched it, I really did not like Leslie. And it was because of how it started, because she left the temple, because even though Jeff said it wasn't a religious thing, like, you know, she felt like she needed to leave. And that always really bothered me, just the way that was handled, the way it felt very disrespectful to me. And knowing where she is now in her life and the journey she's gone on. If you don't know, she's done a lot of like work. I think she and Todd, like there were some differences that they had, but then they worked it out and she actually wrote the foreword to Todd's book or vice versa or something. And they're like very close friends. And she's just gone through a lot of personal growth, which I find really fascinating. And so watching this again, knowing how she has grown as a person really makes me more open to her game, because I really, like, looking back on the first time I watched, I was really shut down. Like, everything she did bothered me. Like, everything she did was just like, did not sit right with me. I don't know what that was. It was clearly because of how it all started, but I feel like I've grown as a person since I first started watching Survivor, but also, you know, knowing kind of how she's grown in her personal life. And she has a great podcast. It's called Beyond the Torch. And she talks to players who played Survivor about their life and not just Survivor, how Survivor has impacted their life. It's a very good podcast. And, you know, I feel much more open to, you know, her as a person and her game. It's very interesting insight into me and my brain, but also just I'm kind of excited to kind of rewatch her game with a little maybe more clarity.
Yeah, no, and I was raised Mormon. And so like, there are a lot of like, people that I'm like, oh, she reminds me of like the woman down the street growing up. I'm like, oh, like, that seems how she's presenting herself is very familiar to me. Mm-hmm. So like, I get that some people like might, you know, find it like off-putting or whatever. But to me, I guess if I was like watching it back when I was in high school, I'd have been like, oh, that's like sister so-and-so down the road. Like, I wouldn't have clocked it as anything different. So that's fun to hear this different perspective.
This is why Survivor is fun, because so many people have so many different opinions based on, you know, their lived experiences. That's just what life is. But that's one of the reasons why Survivor is fun. But I'm excited to see, you know, this is remembering that James came into the game not being a people person and someone coming off as shy, and then seeing how he's developed across the next two seasons. Like, I'm excited to see how, you know, how he grows.
Can I talk about Courtney's quote, one of the most iconic quotes. I'm in the land of flight attendants and Sunday school teachers. Like, we learn so much about Courtney in this episode. And I know, like, probably most of people listening are like, love Courtney. But I think broader America's like, and that's what I love. I love polarizing personalities. Like, even players I don't fully agree with, I'm like, I need people to hate. Which, you know, not to like harp too much on my frustrations with Jeff saying, I don't want villains anymore. I'm casting the show for like 6 to 11 year olds. It's like, no, like, why Survivor was so successful and so interesting for so many years. Like, I was a kid. I was a child watching these people argue over things that I couldn't comprehend.
Yeah.
Or race issues and sexism and classism and like all homophobia. Like, that I just like, I was a teenager being like, oh, they're fighting. Like, I couldn't grasp all that, but I still found it engaging and entertaining. Yeah. And then as an adult on a rewatch, I was like, oh, wow, that was actually quite profound. I didn't realize that. But like, that's what I love about Courtney's character. She goes, I'm a waitress in New York City. I don't do this. And I was like, yes, I love it. Like, just like I said multiple times, it's just the juxtaposition of everyone colliding against each other. I'm like, this is fantastic.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Can I be vulnerable here with you for a moment, Ryan?
Sure.
And everybody listening, can I be vulnerable? Will you promise not to be mean to me? I hated Courtney the first time I watched. Hated.
Oh, no.
Hated with a capital H and a capital A and a capital T. I did not like her. I also thought that she was rude. I thought she was incredibly rude. I thought she was incredibly grating. I couldn't imagine how anybody could act like that. Like, I did not like her. And after the, you know, I've seen Trina multiple times now. Obviously I'm obsessed with her now. Like, I'm obsessed. I just didn't really get, I don't think I got like reality TV. I didn't understand what is necessary. I didn't understand it all. And I just didn't like that somebody was being mean. Like, I didn't like the meanness. And so every now and then I remember that I didn't like Courtney. I go, oh God. Ugh. Like, oh, just dear. Brutal. Yeah. she establishes herself. This is what we're going to get. This is like, you're right. The flight attendants and Sunday school teachers is such a good quote. Yeah. Courtney's so fun. Now over at John Who,
wait, there's one more conversation at Faye Long I do want to talk about.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
When John Robert confronted Todd.
Oh, Mitch, yes.
I know you're a good player. That's like, girl, what? Like,
yeah.
And then Todd's like, can you please not tell other people you think I'm a good player? I'm not saying I am, but can you like not tell? Like Todd's over here like, I was going to come in and play this under the radar sneaky game and I've been clocked on day one. Ugh, like.
But here's the thing though. Like I think this was also a very weird thing for Jean Robert to do. Because. Oh, it just like, and maybe this is my new era lens looking at it, but it's just like, what are we like, why are you in theory establishing a potential nemesis or whatever?
Love that word. Love nemesis. The word. Nemesis.
Thank you. On like day one.
I'm working on is called my nemesis. So
really?
I love it. I had a tarot card reader tell me my future and that I did have a nemesis in my life I needed to uproot. And so it's a lot of my stories are my quest to find my nemesis. Anyway, it's great.
It's great. I just am like, what an interesting approach to a really social game on day one, day two, like really early on to potentially put somebody else on alert, but not only put somebody else on alert like that you're on to them, but that you're smart enough to maybe clock that somebody else could be up to something, which then is like, okay, so now I need to look out for you. It just feels like it puts him on blast more than it puts Todd on blast.
I agree, but I also think that's sort of like the gambler poker player mentality of just kind of like, I think he arrogantly believes that he is a superior strategist to everyone in the game. So if he sees his biggest threat and can get him on his back foot and be like, Todd, I'm on to you. Work with me. Let's not work against each other sort of thing. Like, I've clocked you. Don't betray me. Then maybe in his mind, he goes, well, Todd's going to like stick with me so that I don't blow up his game.
Interesting.
I think that's sort of like the arrogant, like mentality. Well, if I see my biggest opposition and instead of just like sniping them, I go, I'm going to pull you in. Because if I put him on his back foot and be like, but I'm with you, like, let's work together sort of thing. Like, it's like keep your enemies friends close, your enemies closer sort of thing. That I think in a roundabout way, he was trying to pull Todd in by pushing him out. I think I get why he did it. I don't agree with it, but I think at the time, there weren't so many of these game bots. And I think Todd was one of the first, you know, like, well, like, there's like Fair Play and Cesternino, but I don't know how many like game bots came into the game in like Panama, Cook Islands. Most of them were recruits, Fiji. Most of them were recruits that I think Jean Robert was just like, I'm one of the best strategists I'd ever see. I'm going to pick out the next best strategist and like,
yeah,
make them uneasy so they work with me. I don't know. That's where I think his brain went.
I think you're right. And I think it's why, and this is not to talk, I'm not trying to talk about how Jean Robert does the season, but just in general, I do not think that it's why I always rank Poker Players super low. If it's a new cast of people, I'm like, you're going out early. Like, I think Poker Players have this sense of, because my life is around poker, I know how to manipulate, I know how to lie, and they think that they're going to do a lot better, and then they end up not doing very well. Like Ronnie, this is my one claim to fame. I've talked about it 1,000 times recently. My biggest like win for me, and I'm so sorry to Ronnie, season 39, I put all 10 votes that he was going first boot from IOI, and I was right, and I'm still living that high. From 2019, I'm still living that high because I just was like, Poker Players, no. Yeah. Like, I just think that they have this kind of like arrogance that can work against them. We'll see if it happens for that with Jean Robert. But like, I do think that there's something about like in your brain, like it doesn't. But I think that's a very interesting conversation. And I think it's an important conversation that, you know, kind of we see, because we also don't get a ton of that. Somebody said it almost is kind of like what Aubrey and Genevieve happened in season 50. But this feels so much like so much worse, like so much more. I'm putting you on blast specifically.
Yeah. And especially with newbies that have no context of each other, that I bet that in those long train rides, Jean Robert was sizing up his opponents. And I think you like Todd's my biggest.
Do you think, I can't remember, was he lying that he was a poker player? No, right?
He told everyone he was a poker player.
You don't think he did?
I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Because part of me also wonders, is like the one who smelt it, dealt it. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, I know I'm like deceiving and lying. So I think that everyone is lying about everything that they do all of the time. Because didn't he even say like, you're not really a flight attendant?
Yeah.
And he was a flight attendant. Like, that is accurate. He was a flight attendant. So I feel like it's also like, maybe because he's coming into the game knowing that he is deceiving other people, he just is like, everyone's lying to me all of the time. And the parent, like, I feel like it almost is almost paranoia too. Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Okay. Over at John Hu. Okay. John Hu, very interesting camp.
Mess.
Very interesting camp. obviously we've talked a little bit about Chicken. Ashley also is sick. Hurting. She's very sick. This poor girl is really not doing well. And I find that fascinating because, again, I wonder why, because it's such a quick, like they were only there for a little bit of time. It wasn't like she was.
Well, I think there's like the stress of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, maybe she got sick while they were doing those like shoots in like mainland China. And then on the train, maybe she didn't sleep well and she was already like feeling some type of way. And then, you know, not eating and hiking, and it just like exacerbated it. But it's so frustrating. And I always, I really do get so disappointed whenever there's seasons or there's players that are sick on like day two, day three. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, you got to give yourself a chance to like make friends before you get sick. I know you can't choose to be sick, but it's just I always feel so bad for them.
I do too. And especially when there's so much conflict going on over there, right? Like, it's not only that she's, it's like there's a lot of conflict, plus there's somebody who is really, really hurting. So it really kind of adds to the like, you know, we're not really on the same page. How are we going to do with the challenge? Somebody's already sick. It's really crazy. One person that I literally completely forgot about, Dave. I love Dave. He's crazy.
When I was watching this episode, I was like, wow, this tribe like is a bigger mess than I remember.
Huge mess.
Chicken, who is now non-committal about everything, Ashley sick, PG's a little too bossy, Eric and Jamie don't seem to have an opinion on anything ever. Sharia has opinions, not going to share them. like Dave has opinions, will share them. And then Frosty's just kind of like,
yeah.
So I was like, oh, wow. Like, because then you look at the other tribe and you have like James and Aaron and Jean Robert and Denise, who are like, we're workers. And then, like, over here, it's just kind of like, A mess.
I would have loved to have seen Denise and Chicken be on a tribe together. And I know why they split them up, but like, but like that would have been really fascinating because I think they would have maybe both hated each other, but also respected each other. Like it would have been this like really crazy, I think, relationship that would have been so, so, so funny. I don't know. Denise is also somebody we didn't talk about, but I feel like Denise isn't shown a lot in the premiere. Like at all. Like, I don't even think she has a
person being like, I'm a lunch lady. And that was kind of like,
That's it.
But like I don't feel like the tribes are, even though like on paper, you look at the tribes are like pretty uneven, like disproportionate, like strength, or whatever. You get to that challenge. It's basically neck and neck till they get to the puzzle. Can we talk about the challenge or are we still talking about John Hu?
No, we can talk about the challenge.
What a fun, unique challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the sort of thing that, like, I hate, like, beating, like, the dead horse, but it's just kind of like, this is the sort of thing where it's like, we've never seen this challenge before. We will never see it again. Mm-hmm. It's unique to the location. Like, I also love moments and challenges where there's, like, the hero role. Like, they did that on 50 early on where it's like, no, you have to throw the monkey paw. No, you have to do that. Like, I like it when there's these solo side quests that, like, the whole group has to wait for. But I just think the moving dragon and then the puzzle at the end I thought was a creative way of doing that. So I really liked this challenge.
I did, too. I liked it a lot as well. And I also really liked that it was close. Like, I feel like that shows that, again, on paper, one tribe looks to be, like, a mess. But they did come together, and they did it pretty well. And Frosty held his own. He did a good job, like, in that hero role.
It wasn't until they got to the puzzle that Frosty didn't realize he had to go to the top corner because he's, like, looking around. It's like, no, like, look at what the other tribe did. Just, like, I the challenges this season are so unique and distinct. I love them.
Me too. And I think one thing that I felt, this is something about the kind of the overall episode. One thing that really kind of shocked me was a 45-minute premiere episode. That doesn't happen. That does not happen now. It was 3 hours for 50, but like a premiere episode for 45 minutes is crazy.
I believe everyone got a confessional, didn't they?
I think so.
Did Amanda Kimmel have a confessional?
I don't know.
I think Denise had one. I was like trying to go through like John Hu. I know we heard from Sharia, Jamie. Maybe Eric didn't get one. So like 14 of the 16 people, maybe they all did. I was like, I'm not going to go Google this, but
Eric did not get a confessional. Jamie did not get a confessional, but everybody else did, which is a pretty good thing for a 45-minute episode. Yeah.
So no, I really, really like that. And then the chaos that happened back at John Hu after the challenge was so fascinating. And this is why I believe China has one of, if not the best premiere of all time, is because in the scramble, when we went to tribal, I didn't know in real time, like you have no indication. You got three names and then you get to the vote and they show three different names getting votes that you're like, it literally, like there's justifiable reason for all three. And that's sort of why I feel like this might be the strongest premiere because like the intro is unique. The cast is great. The challenge is fun. And then you get a scramble and a tribal that you do not know what's going to happen. Like to me, this is a incredible premiere and just such a great episode of television.
I really think like, and as somebody who knows what's about to happen, I was like, wait, like, am I mixing up the episodes here? I have it?
Yeah. Cause I was like, wait, she got two votes. What? Like, I was like, I thought it was 7-1 in my memory. And then I was like, oh no, a 5-2-1 vote at the first tribal. Yes. I love that. I love that.
Who voted PG? Do you remember?
I want to say that was Ashley.
Okay. And then it was Chicken and I want to find this. I should have written it down. Let me go on the Survivor Wiki. That slows my computer down a little too. Survivor Wiki always slows down my computer, but I can pull it up. Okay. Hold on. It's it doesn't say who voted who. Boo, boo. Oh,
I got it right here. All right, voting history. So the two people that vote, Ashley voted PG, and Dave and Chicken voted Ashley.
Dave and Chicken. Okay, okay. And everybody else voted Chicken. Okay. Now, do you think that this was the right move here for this tribe? What do you think? I mean, I know what we know what's going to happen. Like, yeah, I know you and I have seen this, so we know what's going to happen. But, like, do you think that Chicken would have helped in the long run if he stayed?
No, because Chicken wasn't helping at camp. Like, like, not to dismiss all of his many great attributes, the one thing he brings to the tribe is, like, outdoor skills. And he's willfully and blatantly not, like, sharing his opinion because he got shot down one time.
Right.
So, like, he's not bringing anything to the table. Also, Ashley is sick and is not bringing much to the table. And to a lot of people, what PG's bringing to the table is very off-putting. So it's just like, I get the logic behind all three being like, we don't want the person who's going to, like, tell us what to do. We don't want the person who's not doing anything. But then the person who's, like, not contributing, like, intellectually, like, I get why. And also just, like, you know, if I was on the island, like, even though if I'm looking at Ashley, I'm like, well, she's not contributing because she's sick, but it's like Chicken's not contributing because he's Chicken. Like, yeah. I would probably have been more inclined to vote Chicken.
Yep. I think that you're right. And I really don't know. Like, I don't know that he would have brought a ton to the tribe in the future. Because maybe he's a little bit of strength. Like, he does have a little bit of strength. He's not, like, worthless in the challenges. Yeah. But I do. I mean, I think it's ultimately the right decision. But damn, I was sad.
And that's another reason why, like, this is such a, it is such an iconic for a first boot to just have that visceral of a reaction. Like,
it's I quote this. So I do quote him. I quote him all of the time. I quote him daily. It is probably my most quoted Survivor quote. People think that I'm just saying damn. I'm not.
You're quoting Chicken.
I say it in a specific way. One thing though, I say it so often that I remember it being a more like damn.
Oh no,
like,
I remember
it's so big, he scares the people around him. They kind of jump, like, it's just his arms flail. It's so big. What an exit. And that is, everyone take notes. That's how you leave Survivor. That's how you do it on Survivor.
And then also his final words when he was just like, I'm just grateful to be such a small part of such a grand adventure. I'm like, he was grateful. Like, I was like, oh, Chicken. I know you didn't have a shot in hell at winning, but I loved that you loved, like, what? Because for them, I don't think he played Survivor 3 days, but considering, like, they had to do, like, the shots in Beijing, the shots on the train, like, I'm sure it was, like, a multi-day, like, pre-game shoot before they get to that temple on day one.
Yeah.
That for him, it's like, I went on this week-long adventure to China. I got to see, like, Shanghai, got to take this high-speed train. I got to go to this temple. I got to camp out in this, like, Chinese wilderness. And, like, over the span of a week, it's just like, yeah, that is kind of, like, a cool adventure. And, like, such a fun experience. So,
and no, he's 66 now. He was a 47-year-old chicken farmer from Virginia. And at that point, what American, let alone a chicken farmer from Virginia, was going and doing all of these things in China? None. Exactly. I can think of how many people were on this season? 18, 20? You know, how many?
16.
Yeah. There are 16 people in all of the United States. In all of the world, really, that have this experience. And the fact that he is one of those 16 and he is, you know, probably somebody who literally never dreamed, never thought that this could potentially happen to him. I loved his exit words, like, made me tear up a bit because
they're beautiful.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, would you like to see Chicken back on Survivor?
At this point, no, but I think there was a window. Like, they brought Francesca, they brought Francesca back. Like, so, like, clearly, and Jeff has said recently, like, we will bring back first boots if they're ready to play, which to me screams Maddie Pomilla is being considered for future seasons.
Period.
I have never seen a first boot, like, play that hard. And truly, almost like was successful. Like if they would have thrown their votes on Matthew instead of Brandon, like they would have.
I don't want to talk about this. This is an emotional. It's emotional subject for me.
So I'm just saying, like, I think there was a window of time for Chicken to come back, but he was never going to be successful. So I was okay that he didn't get brought back. And at this point, it's been too long that that ship has sailed. But
his legacy is cemented. Like, I will say, his legacy in Survivor is bigger than a lot of other players' legacies. Like, the fact that he's the first boot from an iconic season, but also just like how he played the game, you know, his damn moment, like all of that, he genuinely has a bigger legacy in Survivor than some people who make it to Final Four. Like, yeah. he really put his mark on the show, and he's somebody that you go to any fan of Survivor who has seen every single season or a lot of seasons and say, name five first boots. I guarantee he's one of the five.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Every single time. So we are at the point of the podcast where if you've never seen Survivor China before and you want to remain unspoiled, then you should turn off the podcast, come back next week, because we are into the spoiler section of the show. Next time I will have a sound. So we're at the spoiler section. Ryan, what are your thoughts rewatching this premiere episode, knowing, you know, the outcome, knowing what happens? What stood out to you here?
So we had started talking about the Todd Jean-Robert thing. And so I love that started a season-long storyline that pays off at Final Tribal Council, mm-hmm. where like we get to the point where like he responds to Jean-Robert's question and like answers it perfectly. And then he's like, okay. And then James goes, you shut up, Jean-Robert. Like, the fact that we started with Jean-Robert's arrogance trying to shut down Todd, and the symbolism that 13 episodes later, Todd shuts down Jean-Robert. Yeah. I'm like, just seeing that like groundwork laid it's so great.
It's really, really good. And it's something that I thought of immediately, like when this conversation happened, because we just watched like a 2 hour long. If you ever wondered if I didn't actually like Survivor, 2 days prior to us watching this, Ryan and I watched a 2 hour long compilation on YouTube of two moments per season. Just two moments, whatever moments, doesn't matter what it is. And one of the moments from Survivor China was Jean-Robert's question to Todd at Final Tribal Council and Todd's answer. And so that was very fresh in my mind when I watched this. Mm-hmm. And I see it here and I go, oh, Todd now understands this man more. And we're seeing the groundwork being laid from episode one, from day one, and continuing on. And not only that, also seeing Todd really beautifully, masterfully kind of manipulate people in a way that they don't necessarily clock it, because maybe they underestimate him. Maybe they don't, I don't know what it is, but you know, we talked about it when he was talking with Aaron, just like the way he was able to kind of subvert everyone else's expectations of like, I'm going to volunteer, but the way he just like really worms in, it is really, truly fascinating and really, really amazing to kind of watch him play this game. I also really, like we talked about it a bit, I'm really excited to see James's like growth through the season. Because he is one of the most beloved players in Survivor history. And so just like, I'm really excited to see him kind of grow into the person who makes one of the dumbest mistakes of all time, but also make his mark on the show. So I'm really, really excited for that. Anybody else that you think like really kind of stood out story-wise?
Yeah. Aaron feels like the case of like the long lost story of like what could have been.
Yeah.
Because he was well-liked, busted up, athletic, that I do think if he makes the merge, there is a distinct chance he could make a very deep run. And it feels like, not to spoil too many other seasons, but if you're already listening to the spoiler section, it feels like the Marcus situation from Gabon, where it's kind of like this golden boy sort of just like should, for all intents and purposes, be the front runner to win, but then just gets taken out on like a wild twist.
Yeah.
And it just feels like it's the lost case of what could have been. And the fact that they never brought Aaron back, I don't know if he wanted to or if they even considered him, but he just feels like someone that I'm like, where was his call for? I know
he feels like Boston Rob,
kind of, but
do you know what I mean? Like an early, like he goes early but could make a really big name for himself. No. In the second time he played,
like I'm trying to think, like, because like, yeah, he probably wouldn't have been considered for Heroes versus Villains as a pre-merge boot. No. But then the captain seasons, it started out because of Robin Russell, and then you bring back very popular or polarizing players in Ozzie and Coach. But then Kara Moen, they specifically said, we only want returning players from season 16 to 25. And it's like, oh, well, then you're cutting him out. And then Blood versus Water had like a weird cast, but it's like, was he even contacted for second chances? Or was that like I just feel like the window like was non-existent for him to return. When I feel like, for all intents and purposes, should have been a strong consideration to come back, because he is a very pretty guy, got these beautiful eyes, very physical, good at these challenges, likable, not problematic at all, that I'm like, this is the type of person like America would want to root for. And the fact that he never comes back is so fascinating to me, because he really gets twist screwed into oblivion.
I made a video
challenge.
Yeah, literally. I made a video a little bit ago saying, like, I think that there should be a captain season with the most unlucky players in Survivor history. And I forgot to mention Aaron, but I remembered him. I just forgot to put him in the video. And then as I was editing, I was like, I've already made the video. I'm not going back and adding him. The most commented person, Aaron. And it's right. He was swap screwed. He was twist screwed. And
wasn't,
you know,
even like swap, like he got kidnapped from the other tribe.
Yeah, yeah.
And they threw the challenge and kicked him out. And it's like, oh, talk about unlucky.
Unlucky indeed.
Now, would he have survived? Because I think Todd would have known to turn on him. John Robert would have known to turn on him. Maybe he doesn't win, but I do think he makes a very deep run. And I think he's a big figure. And then I think because he becomes a big figure of China, maybe they bring him back on Micronesia. Maybe they bring him back on Heroes versus Villains. Like, I just feel like he was sniped short of like a potential that we'll never see now, which is a little disappointing.
I agree. I think there are always these people that the internet is like, I want to see these people back. We need these people back. It's like a list of people like Brian Corridon, Aaron, you know, who else can I just like they're Pete, like small sections, but like they're never going to bring these people back because nobody remembers, no regular Survivor watcher remembers these people. And so they're probably never going to come back, which stinks. But like, I think that there is so much potential specifically with Aaron. And I forgot how much impact he really did have on the season, because I haven't seen the season in a while. And so he's an interesting one. Any other thoughts on the premiere episode of Survivor China?
It's so captivating. The fact that it, you know, without commercials is 42 minutes is just like the journey you go on from the cultural experiences to the challenges, to the people, to the gameplay. It's just like, it's pretty darn close to a perfect episode of Survivor.
It is a really, really, really good episode of Survivor. And you know what? I cannot wait to get into the rest of the season. And so for those of you who are still here, probably should have said this before the spoiler section, I'm working things out. As you can tell, if you were on the live stream on Friday, you can tell that I'm still in the working things out process. But if episodes 2 and 3 will be tonight, 6 p.m., we're going to go live on the Discord. If you're not in the Discord, if you go to the link in my bio on any of my social media pages, you can join the Discord. We will be hopefully figuring out a way to stream it there. because it's private, so we can do that. And then I will also be going live on TikTok. So if you have Paramount Plus or a way to watch it yourself, you're more than welcome to join there while I watch the episodes tonight. So it's 2 and 3 tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern. Feel free. You do not have to watch with me while I'm doing it, as long as you watch by the time we get to the podcast. That way you're caught up. But episode 2 and 3 on Monday tonight, and then episode 4 on Friday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So that will be really, really fun. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me for the premiere episode. Where can the people find you if they want to hear more of your Survivor thoughts?
Yeah, well, I have officially started to transition my TikTok account, as is the season, to my Big Brother content. So if you are big on Big Brother and live feeds, my TikTok at Rye Irwin. I'm a stand-up comedian. I post my comedy stuff on my Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. I need to do better at posting more often there. But yeah, that's what's up for me.
Amazing. And one last thing before I let you go. Premiere episode of Survivor China. Who was your favorite character this episode? Favorite person this episode? Do you have one or?
I don't know. Cause I was focused on more like the cohesive thing. Like I always have a soft spot for strategists. So like I did love Todd, but then I also love big characters. So like Chicken was great. I also really had a soft spot for PG when she like got really emotional at the temple being like, I'm a Chinese immigrant, and if my grandfather could see me here, like, that really touched my heart. So, no, I just like the collective whole more than I think I like any singular individual.
I agree. It was a really, really fun episode, and I think this is going to be a really fun rewatch. So I will see you guys tonight, like I said, TikTok Live or on the Discord. And if you just want to keep up on the Discord, you can just, there's a spoiler section and a not spoiler section. So you can add in your comments, your thoughts on the episodes when you watch them, keep up there. So it'll be very fun. But I will see, like I said, see you tonight, see you Friday, and then I'll see you right back here on Monday for episodes 2 through 4. I will have Ashley Hufford on. She is a I'm so excited. She is a Broadway content creator, but she also is obsessed with Survivor. So I'm very excited to have her on. But thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, damn. Bye.